part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
Why don't we just begin by saying that this is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast, and my name is Christian Horn, and your name is Jordan Hart. We have a very special guest. His name is Jordan Hart on the line, and you have a book. It's currently out, correct?
Correct, yeah. It started 2 weeks ago.
Started 2 weeks ago, okay, and it's called Ripple Effects. It's out by Fanbase Press, but currently, it's only digital, correct?
Correct, yes. We're doing individual issues on Hoopla every month, about the middle of the month they come out, issue 2, July 13th. And then we will have the compiled printed trade paperback release in November.
Nice. But
if you are at San Diego Comic-Con, we will be doing a printed convention variant exclusive of issue 1, which will be at the press table. Yep.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. So, okay. So there'll be a printed edition of the first issue at San Diego.
Correct.
Yep. Nice. Nice. And so, I mean, we should definitely talk about Ripple Effects, the book, but what is Hoopla? Because I was not aware of it. So, I mean, if this is where it's coming out, like, yeah, it would be like, I went to the site and I was like, oh, does this have something to do with like public libraries? Like what is Hoopla?
Correct. Yeah. So it is a digital platform for, you know, literature, right? It's not just comics. There's books on there, everything. And the really cool thing about it is that if you have a library card, you can read anything on Hoopla for free.
Okay.
So it's like great. If you have a library card, you could look up Ripple Effects, read all the issues right there for free, which is really cool. And it was really important to Fanbase Press and I, to get as many people to read this as possible, especially people with, you know, chronic illness or invisible illnesses, which is really the core of the concept of Ripple Effects. You know, we're big champions of comic book stores, obviously.
Yeah.
Grew up my whole life going to them. I have a pull box at Pulp Fiction in Culver City.
Nice.
But yeah, we'll be doing that with the printed trade. But for this, we thought it was a great way for people who might not have access to a comic book store close to them to be able to read the comic. Really excited about.
Oh, that's interesting. So basically, if you have a library card, you can read this for free, or do you purchase it through Hoopla?
Correct. If you have a library card, you can go to Hoopla and read it for free.
Using your library. Wow. That's a very interesting model. I mean, did you have any concerns about sort of like maybe giving the book away for free to be able to read? Like, were there any worries about that, or you just wanted to get it out to as many people as possible and it kind of didn't matter and you were hoping the best for like the print edition?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
With this book, this is a special book for me. So the goal was always to just get it in front of as many people as possible.
Nice. Oh, okay. Wow. That's amazing. I mean, that's really cool. I think that's a really great way to do it. I mean, it's definitely kind of like a different business model than I've encountered before, but I mean, a lot of web comics kind of do it that way, right? Where they just kind of put it on the internet and then they either kind of crowdfund, you know, the printed edition, or will print it up themselves and hopefully the revenue comes in from that.
Correct. Yep. Yeah. That's exactly what we were thinking.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. So for people who do not know, and knowing Fanbase Press, people probably already do, but in case people don't know, because they're very good at what they do, what is Ripple Effects? I mean, what is sort of like the very quick kind of elevator pitch for this book? Because I will say that I read it and I very much enjoyed it. I thought it was like a very unique take on like kind of superpowers, or, you know, being superpowered. And I very much liked the sort of like concept of it. So can you tell anybody who's listening what Ripple Effects is about?
Great. Yeah. Thank you very much for those kind words, first of all. But yeah, the quick pitch of the elevator pitch of Ripple Effects is that the main character, George Gibson, he's a 25-year-old living in Long Beach, and he's invincible. He developed 3 years before the story, basically invulnerability in the form of damage negation. So anything that hits his body, his skin just ripples and diffuses it. So that's where the title Ripple Effects comes from. But the catch is, with that superpower also came type 1 diabetes. So it's an interesting dynamic of nothing can hurt George except himself, right? Nice. Like, he's invincible, but if he doesn't inject insulin every day, his body's going to shut down. And with that in mind, you know, George is trying to hide both of these at the same time. He wants to hide his invincibility because he doesn't want to become a superhero, be known as one. And he also hides his invisible illness out of fear, out of being treated differently, and people not understanding. And that is important to me because I have an invisible illness. I have a chronic illness that's incurable. I have to take medicine every day to stay alive. And that is where the idea for this came. And a lot of my journey has been hiding that from coworkers, from colleagues, from friends, out of, you know, just fear of being treated differently, stigmas, and you know, I just wanted to capture all of that into a story for everyone with invisible illnesses to kind of read and you know, see themselves in George, but also for people that might not have any exposure to chronic illness or invisible illness and kind of take a look into what life with that is like.
Yeah. No, so it's interesting. I mean, is diabetes the thing that you were diagnosed with or that you have? Or, I mean, you don't have to say, but I mean, was it through your life experience that you made the main character experience or be diagnosed with diabetes?
So I have thrombophilia, which is a blood clotting.
Okay.
So my body produces blood clots just naturally. So gotcha. I have to take anticoagulants. And that was originally what George had, but it was just too hard to write. It was so close to home that like I couldn't bring myself to do it. So one of my best friends at work has been a type 1 diabetic since he was 7 years old.
Okay.
So I knew that through him, I could make George a type 1 diabetic and use my friend's stories and everything he's lived with. He's been a comic fan his whole life too, so it's perfect.
Nice.
And he basically would be the story consultant to let me tell a really accurate story.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's great that you were able to do that. I mean, I apologize for your friend, or, you know, I feel badly for your friend that was diagnosed with it. But I mean, it's good that you had somebody to fall back on and actually have like a first person kind of perspective on the situation, right?
Totally. Yeah. And that was my goal, like trying to tell a really accurate story. So, you know, like I'd say the physical illness was helped from my friend to become real, but like all of the internal emotions and feelings from that George is going through because of that, that's all coming from me. So I was like able to combine both of those.
Sure. And let me apologize for, you know, before I say, if I do stumble over my words or say something stupid or say something that's not appropriate or inappropriate, like in diagnosis or, you know, I apologize for being, you know, my language not fitting what I'm trying to say or stump. So if I do that, I apologize in advance. I don't mean to be insensitive in any way to anything that you or your friend are going through. So, I can be dopey that way sometimes, I guess. I don't.
So can I.
Okay, that's good. That's good. As long as we get it out of the way that Christian can be a moron sometimes or say something.
I'm right with you.
No, but I guess one of the things that, that I wanted to say about this book is that I found it's so interesting, especially with everything that sort of like the country is going through, like right now with kind of like the weird Supreme Court decisions and stuff like that. Like, I found this book to be a very like mature, grown up read in a way, right? Like it was very interesting to me that it was tackling issues of dealing with a medical condition in a way that, you know, obviously you're sort of dealing with superpowers, but at the same time, there's reference to the fact that how difficult it is to sort of deal with it, not just because of your physicality or what you're going through, but also the aspect of getting the medication and having to inject it every day or however often you have to. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because I mean, it definitely seems like through your life experience that is a difficulty that you've had to deal with, correct? I would imagine.
Yeah. Yes, correct. And, you know, I wasn't born with thrombophilia. It just, my body developed it when I was 25. So exactly.
Oh, interesting.
What he was 25, he got diabetes. So that's kind of the shared history there. But so, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people with chronic illnesses are born with it, or like my friend that got it young. I was, you know, would be classified as healthy, right, until I was 25. And then it came and it blindsided me, and it changed my life, right? Like,
sure.
You think you're kind of like always nervous, right? Like you have anxiety about getting medicine, about forgetting your medicine, about interactions with the medicine. And then on top of it, I had a ton of medical debt because I was hospitalized for a week. So it's you have medical debt, and like all this stuff compounds. And then, you know, like things that you don't really, you wouldn't think about if you weren't ill. Like, you know, my biggest stress comes, and like you said, right now going on with the Supreme Court, you know, there's a lot of scary stuff going on. But, you know, for me, it was pre-existing conditions, right? Yeah. Like, that's such a major thing for me because I'm going to have a pre-existing condition my entire life. So if that protection of pre-existing condition goes away, like that could be financial ruin for anyone. You know, that's the number one cause of bankruptcy in this country is medical debt.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's unfortunate. And, you know, like I don't want to get too political or anything like that.
Go ahead. But, I mean, I'm open to it. So I'm a California liberal. If you feel like it might drive people away from your book, that's totally fine, but feel free to engage. I have no qualms or quibbles about it.
And that's just like, you know, what I wanted to work into the story is that if you're chronically ill, it's so much more than just having that illness, right?
Sure.
There's a lot of stuff that comes with it. So like you said, in order to tell the real story, like medical debt is a real problem. Access to medicine is a problem. So to make it real, I knew I had to fold it in there. And fan base really not only was supportive of that, but very encouraging. You know, they wanted it to be as accurate as possible. So, you know, I'm very fortunate. And then what the illness I have. The medication isn't an exorbitant cost, right? So I'm very fortunate that way. But you know, it's just that fear and anxiety is always kind of tapping you on the shoulder, right?
I mean, it's I think even for people without a condition like yours, especially if you're sort of like a parent too, it's very much an issue. And it's funny because my wife and I have started like going on evening walks together as like my daughter has gotten older and she's able to like do homework. And, you know, we get in all kinds of conversations. And one of the things that I really felt was, and if I'm being too political, you can say, Christian, you're being too political, and I will shut up about it. But there is a part of me that is very much like, I don't know what it was that kind of like set me off on this particular walk this week where I was like, this country, I mean, right. Like what was it about this week? But this country has really been sold like a bill of goods. Like it's just like, how can people not see that it is a better way for us to have some sort of like healthcare, you know, whatever infrastructure that we literally do not have and that everyone is at risk from being, you know, falling prey to, you know, victim to, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah. Yeah. It's one of many things. Right.
Sure.
So and same thing, like if I think about it too much, I start getting stressed out.
Yeah. So, yeah. Absolutely. And you know, I do not want to stress you out.
No, I mean, you're not stressing me out, but I mean, like, I feel the same way where it's just like, ugh, you know, but yeah. I just, you know, like thank the heavens that they've been able to keep pre-existing conditions, you know, like covered right now, because
absolutely.
Like, I feel like most people have a pre-existing condition. Like, there's data on it too. Like,
sure.
You don't have to be chronically ill to have a pre-existing condition, you know? So,
Or sometimes it can seem like life itself is a pre-existing condition.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, go ahead.
Capture all of that in the story, right? Like, work into, like, okay, it's not just about being ill and the physical side of being ill. It's a lot about the stress and anxiety of that.
Sure. And I should say, like, with the stuff that we're talking about, I mean, this is a very entertaining read. Like, this is not like a sort of book that's like hammering you over the head with anything. I mean, if anything, the context is subtle in a way. And I think that it's very clever what you've done, which is, because one of the superpowers that I feel like you've been a comic reader for a while, but that I've always thought would be the greatest one to have would be invulnerability, right? Like, to me, it's like, if I could not be hurt by anything, like physically, I mean, God knows what I'd do, you know what I mean? And you've done that in this book and very intelligently kind of like turned it on its head. Can you speak to that at all?
Yes, thank you. So, you know, the goal with this is exactly like you said. It's like, I wanted to fold in that stuff we just talked about into the story, but it's not to not be preachy and to not get, like, drive the story. Like, it's subtext. It's, you know, you can pick up on it, but I agree. Invincibility would be the ultimate power for me as well, because what do you worry about, right? Yeah. Like, you like, just think about the things you wouldn't worry about if you were invincible, and you could just go down the list. And I always thought it was the best power. So, you know, how do you make invincibility interesting, right? If you're just invincible with no weakness, who cares? Like, Achilles had his heel, Superman has kryptonite. And I was like, well, what can I do with, you know, George? And it's like, well, he's got type 1 diabetes. Actually, it was flipped. The idea came to me. I was like, when I was in the hospital, I was like, wow, my internal body is trying to kill me and shut me down. Like, wouldn't that be interesting if I was externally invincible? Like, what a great story that would be. And that's how the whole idea came. But yeah, at the end of the day, I wanted to tell a superhero story. I've written a bunch of comics. I've never done a superhero story. And that's what I grew up with. X-Men was my first comic when I was 5 years old, and I've been hooked ever since. So I've always dreamed of doing a superhero story, and I just wanted to do one that was, you know, something that had never been done before, which is hard because superheroes have been around like since the 38. So this was just my spin on it. And, you know, you look at Daredevil, right? He's blind, so that's great. But that also gave him his superpower, right? Like, where he can see the radar waves almost in a way.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do a story where it completely offset the superpower. It didn't give you your powers. It negated the powers.
Well done, because I honestly... But before I looked at the digital copy of this book, I mean, obviously I got the press from Fanbase Press, and sometimes I can be guilty of just like quickly reading it and being like, okay, but I did not realize that this like occurred when I was reading it in a superhero universe. So I was very much reading it thinking like, oh, this character is the only one like this. Right. And it seemed very like slice of life. And I was like, oh, this is cool. This is very interesting. And then another superhero shows up, or a super being, and I was like, oh wait. And so for me, and I hope I didn't ruin, you know, if anybody listens to this, I probably ruined that kind of like surprise. I hope that's not a spoiler or anything, but to me it was very cool the way that it kind of like organically unfolded. I was, you know, the surprise was very neat. Can you talk to me a little bit about like the idea of just one super being, because that's what I felt like. I was like, oh, this is the only guy. Like, this is why, part of why he's keeping it secret. And then it turns out, oh, there's more of these. So is that something that you were kind of like leaning towards when you were writing the first issue? Like, oh, just, I want to present this. Or was it Is it a surprise to you to hear me say that in a way that I didn't realize that it was all, you know, in a superheroic universe?
Yeah, it's good to hear you say that because if, like you said, slice of life, if you had not known that there were other superheroes, you're just really focusing on George the character and this character story, which is what I really wanted to do. But I knew there had to be heroes in it, and there's not many. I have it written that there's only 17, right?
Oh, that's okay.
The core of this world, and you'll learn that later on, that there's only 17 superheroes in the world.
Yeah.
And that just really weighs on George, because when in issue one, when the superhero finds out that he has powers, that she's recruiting him. She wants him to join. There's only 17 in the world. You're special. You need to do this, but he's crushed by his self-doubt and okay. by his illness to not feel like he can do that. Right. To feel like it's too dangerous. So, that was something I really wanted to do. And then, you know, like just working in, like part of it, why he doesn't want to come out is he doesn't want the fame. Like if you can imagine, if superheroes were real in our world, would people care about movie actors or influencers or any, like, I mean, sure, they probably would, but like superheroes would be everything, right? If they were real, they would be the pinnacles, I would say, of celebrities, you know, no one would be above them. So
sure.
In Ripple Effects, that is also the case, even though I don't really dig into it, it's alluded to that George doesn't want that fame or attention either. So he's very much hiding it. Yeah. But I had to work heroes in because I just always want to do a superhero story. And there's some cool powers that you'll see as the story progresses. You'll meet more superheroes, all the ones from L.A., because that's where it's set, is in Los Angeles. So we basically meet L.A. County's crew of superheroes.
Oh, nice. That's great. Can you talk to me a little bit, because it's interesting to me how you chose the main character to sort of be, because it seems to me like, and maybe it's just my own superficiality, right? Like if you were to get invulnerability, even if you did have a condition like he has, or diagnosed with something that he has, that you might go the opposite of this, right? Like, and maybe it's my own cynicism, where that you would be like, I'm invulnerable. Like, even if you had a vulnerability, like that your ego might be inflated. In your own mind, where did you decide? Was it just natural for you to just be like, oh no, I want this character to sort of be like hiding within themselves? Because to me, it would seem like, and again, it may be my own ego where it's like, if I was suddenly invulnerable, I'd be like, yo, I'm ready to go. Like, you know what I mean? Like nothing can stop me, even though whatever I have, whatever's going on inside me, like that might be the thing, what's going inside me might be the thing that I might want to hide. But if I were invulnerable, maybe that would give me the ego to feel, do you understand where I'm going? Am I making any sense?
I totally get where you're going. And I'm glad you brought that up because I knew right away he would hide it, just because of my experiences of who I was before I became ill and then who I was after. Like, there was just so many things I worried about. You know, I got very active. So it's like, well, I can't water ski or ski again or mountain bike or like do all this stuff because I'm on blood thinner, so I bruise easily. Internal bleeding is like a major issue, right? So it's like all these things I love doing, I just basically gave up. I was like, I can't do that anymore. I can't skateboard, I can't do this stuff. And it was just like this worry about something going wrong. So that's basically where George's mind is at. And it's further developed in issue 2 and issue 3. He'll talk about that more and you'll get the reasoning. But yeah, the whole reason he wants to hide it is because of his diabetes. You know, his fear is, okay, what if someone bad finds out that he has that he's diabetic, right? And it's like, okay, well, if you lock him in a room and don't give him his insulin for a couple of days, like he will die.
Yeah.
And that's all he thinks about. Like, he doesn't think about, well, what could he do to help? Like, how could he help people? He's thinking about like, will this cost me my life? that stuff, which I know is pretty dark and pretty negative, but you know, that's where we meet George. You know, he's kind of very anxious. He's depressed about, you know, being ill and his change of life. And these are all, you know, it's not what everyone goes through, but it's from the people with chronic illnesses that I've talked to, it's the adjustment period. It is hard. And that's where we meet George, is in that adjustment period.
Sure. It's very interesting to me because it doesn't seem like this reminds me of maybe like an interview maybe I read with, I want to say it's Mark Waid or something like that, where he was basically talking about like conversations about people, like what superpower would you most want to have, right? Like what would be the greatest superpower to have? And flight would inevitably like come up, right? Because I don't know about you, but that would be awesome. As long as I didn't have to deal with bugs in my face and you know, all that stuff and the cold and everything. But, inevitably in the conversation about flight, there would be certain people who are like, no, I wouldn't want to fly. And he would be like, why? Like, why wouldn't you want to fly? And they would be like, well, what if I just fell? Like, what if I just was flying and I felt like the flight gave out? And it's interesting to me because your character has this idea of his own vulnerability and diagnosis and what he's dealing with as the thing to keep him from, you know, going completely like, you know, like going out there and facing the world with it. But it seems to me like that's like a general just human fear, right? Like if you had this thing and it just gave out too, like we all have that anxiety, I think, or a lot of us do, I would say, right?
Yeah. That's a great point. I had not heard that quote, but it makes total sense, you know? Yeah, I mean, risks are scary, right? For every human being, taking a risk, no matter what kind of risk it is, you know, whether you're going to walk a tightrope over the Grand Canyon or, you know, buy a house with all the money you've saved for 15 or 20 years, right? Like risks are scary. And that's what George would be doing, is taking a risk to become a superhero. And he doesn't want to do it. And I think that's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, it also comes to sort of the like Fight Club thing, right? Like we all think that we're going to be superheroes if we get powers and we're going to do like the thing. But I mean, one of the things in that book and that movie that they point out is like that all of us, most of us in life who are decent human beings have kind of been conditioned like not to fight, like not be aggressive, right? So that we can all survive in this society. And like, what would it take for you to sort of like punch someone, you know what I'm saying? If you're not some aggro bro out there looking to get into a fight, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Even if you were invulnerable or super strong or whatever, like, I don't know that for a lot of us, we would be running out there and just hitting people. You know what I mean?
Totally. And you know, I'm a musician. I play guitar and drums. And I guess part of it that went into building the story too is that I know some amazing musicians, right? Like guitarists that are better than me than I'll ever be, right? And drummers the same way too. But they have no urge to ever play live.
Oh,
right?
Interesting.
And they're like, I don't want to be in a band. I don't want to play live. And literally they're just shredding in front of my face.
Oh, wow. Like,
I fully understand why they don't want to be in a band, right? But like at the same time, it's like, man, you know, like so many people sharing that with someone else, right, would be awesome. But if you don't feel like being in a band, you don't want to go out there, like that's fine too. Like that's just who you are. And I mean, obviously today YouTube has really changed that, right? Like there are so many great musicians out there that are just in their living room or in their bedroom, just shredding. And it's like, you know, this is great, right? Because they don't have to leave. But I kind of use my experiences with that to, you know, knowing all these great musicians. I went to art school for college, and like all of my classmates, everyone could play an instrument, everyone. And out of all of us, maybe 5% were actually in a band, right? So like that kind of experience helped shape this too.
Wow, that's, I mean, that's very interesting, because one of the things, I mean, I moved to Los Angeles to become an actor when I was younger, and there were a lot of obviously things that you go through, you know, when you get here, especially if you're not wealthy or whatever. But one of the things that I very much kind of developed towards the sort of end of my tenure was this, like, I don't know if I would call it like stage fright or like what it was like when going into audition. Like, I became very aware of myself and like what I was doing or what or the idea of what people were thinking of when they were looking at me, like sort of like this weird social anxiety. And it kind of eventually made me walk away from it, because it was just like, I just would get too much into my head. And it's so interesting that you talk about this with your musician friends, because it's like, I understand that. And just you talking about it in that way for somebody like me very much makes it go like, that's an even bigger like dimension of character for me, like where I'm like, oh wow, that makes total and complete sense to me.
Awesome. Yeah.
Like, and I would imagine it makes total and complete sense for anybody who, I mean, I think a lot of people are like that, right? They don't want to get up and speak publicly. It's probably the like number one fear that most people have, right? Getting up in front of a group and speaking, correct?
Totally. I would agree. Yeah. And it's just like you said, and if people don't want to do that, good for them. Like, you know, like,
yes. Yeah.
Because you have a talent doesn't mean you're obligated to use it or to share it or to do, you know, to do anything like that. Like, that's why we have free will. We can do, live the life that we want, right? So that's basically where we find George, is like, he has this ability, but he chooses not to use it. And that's not wrong. You know, like, there, you know, it's, you should live your life the way you want to live it, you know? And that's just one thing I've learned.
Yeah, but what about the sort of, and I think this is one thing you address in this book, and, you know, I'm scrolling through it on my tablet as I talk to you. You kind of address, there's that whole thing of like one of my favorite movies of all time. I mean, it is my favorite movie, is the original Superman movie with Christopher Reeve, right? I will watch it like on Father's Day, because I love it. And there's issues that I have, you know, with my own father, who he passed away when I was young. But the responsibility of like, you have this, you have to share it with the world. And it's interesting, because you have a very good scene in this book where he's basically a food delivery guy, right? And not bashing anybody who delivers food, you know, I appreciate you. Thank you for everything you do. You get it to me on time and piping hot and, you know, all that stuff. I don't look my nose down on anybody who does anything, right, for a living. But it's interesting to me, because he on a food delivery, he's delivering to this record company, right? And he runs into another girl, and there's a bit of dialogue where they talk about their teacher in school and how they were great in school and what their teacher would think about them having not done kind of like better than what they're doing. Can you speak to that at all? Because I found that to be like really interesting, and sort of the resolution of the main characters, you know, at the end of that scene, what he says was very interesting as well. How do you feel about like having a responsibility to share your talent or to do whatever you can with whatever your skill set are? I mean, it seems like you're addressing that in this book, right? A little bit.
Yeah, totally. And yeah. And that scene, you know, just for context, is yes, George and a classmate, Norma, were both the best in class, and George is, you know, working at essentially Uber Eats. And Norma is a receptionist at a record company because she wants to be a singer, a vocalist, right? And by working there, she's meeting agents and meeting people like that. And the thing, and what she says is, you know, look at, what did you think of our old homeroom teacher? You know, like, two of the top of class, one is a delivery man, one is a receptionist. Yeah. And you know, he says he'd be proud because we're doing what we need to do to chase our dreams, right? You know, like, George's dream is not to be a superhero. His dream is to be a novelist.
Yeah.
And by working as a as you know for Uber Eats, he has the flexibility to write when he wants.
Yeah.
And Norma, the same thing too. Yes, Norma could be a scientist or you know a surgeon or whatever she wanted to be, but she wants to be a vocalist, a singer. So she's working and taking steps to get to that dream. And you know that is the ultimate message. You know, here is that, you know, there's no. Just because you're good at something doesn't mean it's like that's all you are. That's what you need to do, right? So yeah. Like the valedictorian from my high school, last I checked, he became a web programmer, HTML programmer. And I'm sure he's phenomenal at it, but it's like you don't need really a degree to be a web programmer, right? Like you can buy books and teach yourself and like do all that stuff. And it's like that's what he loved and that's what he wanted to do. And I think that's great. You know, I think.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, we're just very lucky to have that choice, you know?
Like, yeah. It's a very interesting take on that whole thing. And I wish when I was younger, I had maybe had that more because it was very much like, I mean, I don't know you about you as an artist, but even younger and even as an adult now, like trying to do things outside of my own professional, you know, work life, there's definitely this thing of like, is this all I am? Because I spend 8 hours a day doing this, you know what I mean? And social media doesn't help that either. You know, when you're seeing everybody kind of like live their most perfect life and sometimes you feel like you're treading water. Yes, I am talking about myself. You know what I mean? But it's a very good take to have on that, which is like, I'm doing what I need to do and I should be proud of this and good with that, as opposed to like, I haven't gotten to the top of that mountain yet. Why haven't I gotten there? And it sucks that I'm doing this. I mean, that's very cool. Like, is that something you had to work through on your own as well?
Actually, I was very, very fortunate to have two parents that really supported me to follow art. So my grandparents are immigrants. And actually, they lived in refugee camps almost all of their childhood before immigrating. My parents are blue collar. My dad was truck driver. My mom is a receptionist. That's why Norma in the book is a receptionist. Yeah. A little hat to her. So they always just told me to pursue what I wanted to, because that's something my grandparents weren't able to do. Yeah. You know, that... then, you know, my parents worked really, really hard. So they were, I was lucky to have them to support me. Although there was, you know, the only two things I ever wanted to do was work in comics since I was a kid, like work for Marvel as an artist.
Oh, wow.
And when I got to like high school age, I wanted to be a stunt double. I wanted to be a stunt double. And I will say they were supportive, but they were like, because I wanted to go right after high school, like just go out there, be a stunt double. You don't need a degree for that. And get your degree to have something to fall back on. Right. Yeah. So that was like the one time they really like pushed. They're like, okay, you can do this, but like you need to get your degree first. Cause no one from my family had gotten a degree. I was the first person to go to college. So they really they ground that in. So I didn't fight that one.
Oh, that's so great though, that you had that really great support system, you know, because for me growing up, a lot of it was like, be a lawyer, be a doctor. That's where the money is. Be a lawyer, be a doctor. And I'm like, look who you're talking to. Like what are you?
Yeah.
That's so great. Because I mean, that was one of my things too, is that, are you an artist? Do you draw?
I not as much as I used to. I did go to art school. I got accepted for painting actually, then switched to graphic design. So I did do, that's where I got my degree in, was design, and you worked in as an art director for a while in advertising. So still art related, but not actually doing the drawing and stuff like that. But I do color my comics still. Like effects, I'm the colorist on that. And that's kind of, you know, that's like digital painting in a way, right? So I get kind of the artistic release that way and coloring all of my comics.
That's cool. So do you paint in your spare time at all, or do you do any of that anymore? Or
no, sadly, it's just like my spare time between working really goes to comics, right? So that's where it all goes. And then also still music. I still love to do music, but yeah, one day.
That's cool. That's cool. No, my daughter is a painter. So that's why I was curious to see like, yeah. Oh, are you still, cause I always wonder like outside of a classroom environment and when she gets older, will she still be doing it? But she sees it as a form of like relaxation. So I could imagine like, yes. And I always make the joke on this podcast. I'm like, you see it as like when I draw, it's like complete stress. Like, I'm just like, is this right? Yeah. Have I gotten it right? And stuff like that.
Yeah.
But no, this is great. I mean, that's one of the things too, is that it's a very good looking book. I mean, who is the artist?
The artist is Bruno Chirilo, from Brazil. And he was great. And, you know, the book can get heavy at times. So I really wanted a lighter style to it. And also it being set in California, I knew I wanted it to be a really vibrant book. Like I wanted lots of pinks and yellows and purples. And if it was an ink heavy artist, you wouldn't get that saturation and vibrance through. So he's got a very delicate line work, which I really liked.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I really enjoyed about it too. Well, I also very much enjoyed your coloring. I think the palette is really, really pretty and very nice, but I very much liked the simple sort of line work, not too much cross hatching, really good storytelling and form and stuff like that. And it just like really worked for me from the very first page. I was like, oh, this looks, you know, like really nice. How did you find him?
So fanbase found him, which was awesome, because for all my other books, I've had to find artists myself.
Like, oh, gotcha.
Dredging through DeviantArt and just pounding Artist Alley at every SoCal Comic Con.
Oh,
right?
Really?
Yeah, like just going everywhere and seeing who I can meet. And so, yeah, so actually they had a network of artists that they were able to basically just put out like a call to submissions for. And we got some great submissions and some phenomenal artists. But Bruno was the right one for this book. And that's one thing I tell writers, you know, like that want to get into comic writing, is that like this is a visual medium. Yeah. So you have to have the right artist for the right book. Like I said, like Bruno's thin line work, like, and not much cross hatching, like you said, like, would it work like in a horror book? Not as well. Right? Like a horror should be, you want to be darker, more ink heavy, stuff like that. So you have to really find an artist that has the right visual style for the tone of your book. And that's really hard when it's like a monumental task just to find an artist to begin with.
Sure.
So yeah, have a lot of ideas. That's what I also tell writers, like, okay, so if you have this really idea you want, but you can't find the right artist, but you have a different artist with a different style, like maybe a different idea is going to work, right? And explore that.
Yeah. Well, how much, because you colored this book, right? How much do you feel, because I feel like coloring these days, and I think that this artist is really great, but I have come across a lot of like indie books, even mainstream books, where I feel like the color is doing the heavy lifting here. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like this line art or this particular art isn't doing it for me, you know what I mean? But the color saved it. And I feel like we're very much in that space, or have been for, you know, whenever digital coloring started, where coloring can save a book. And so, I mean, I feel like this artist's artwork could work in a horror book if you were to apply like a completely like different palette. I mean, obviously the guy knows storytelling, the guy knows anatomy. Totally. It's, you know, really, like I said, like I really loved the energy of like all of the panels and stuff, but your color does bring something else to it. Can you speak to me about your thoughts on that? Like color?
No, I agree. Yeah. Like color is very, very important. And I think it's I think coloring and honestly lettering are really overlooked in comics for how important they are.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, writers and pencilers and inkers will tell you how important that they are. Right. But like, just they get overlooked, and you're right. I mean, the color sets the tone.
Yeah.
Of the page, and if it's not right, and I mean, I don't want to knock it because, you know, who am I to knock it, but to knock them. But like, that's what kills me about the recoloring of Jack Kirby art, right? Oh. Like when I see recolored Kirby art with like lighting and shadows.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
That, like, it honestly, for me, it ruins the art because it's like the Kirby didn't have that back in the day. Like he was drawing for flat coloring. So that's why there's so much cross hatching and so much ink shadowing and stuff like that. Right. So like, it just, when I see like the overly colored Kirby stuff, like it turns me off.
Like with the airbrushing and they're trying to add like texture or I totally get it. Yeah.
Because it's like that is great for an artist that's drawing for that type of coloring, but Kirby didn't draw for that. He was drawing for flat color. I mean, all those guys from the Silver Age, they were drawing for flat colors.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you read X-Men Grand Design by Ed.
I have not read that yet. I need to pick it up. I was kind of waiting for it to sort of be done and then go, and I just haven't gone back. But that's Eddie Piskor, right?
Yeah. So in the back of like the oversized trade, he recolored Kirby's every page from X-Men 1.
Kirby's
X-Men 1. Yeah, and Eddie P, as me and my friends call him jokingly. I've never met him, so I don't know if I should. But Eddie P used his palettes to what he thought was appropriate for Kirby, and it's phenomenal. I suggest anyone to just, I mean, it looks so good where you're just like, God, can they just do this to every old Kirby page? Yeah. Because it looks so good. It looks phenomenal. So, and you know, I don't know him, so I can't make a claim, but I got to imagine he felt the same way and was as I do.
Sure.
And it was like, let's, you know, get some flat colors and some awesome palettes on this stuff.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, that is sort of one of the things. I mean, I remember when I was learning Photoshop and coloring and stuff like that, that one of the things that kind of like just really would astound me was to see how much airbrushing was used. And to me, it was almost like some of those artists who like just overdid the cross hatching and the lines and stuff like that. I'm like, guys, we don't need this. Like you're overdoing it. It's too much. You're adding dimensionality to something that doesn't need it. If that's a word, dimensionality, but you know, I totally get what you're saying. And I feel like you've done a very lovely job, you know, coloring this book, and the illustration is great. And I mean, everything is very like clear and defined, and the story just flows like really well for me.
Thank you. And I mean, I'll be admittedly, I think the colors get better as the story goes on. I really started to hit my stride, and issue 5 of Ripple Effects is some of like, I think it's probably the best single issue I've ever colored. I was really able to hit my stride with Bruno and like just dialing in, because issue 5 is a ton of superhero power. There's a lot going on in issue 5, and I was really able to kind of really cut loose on the effects for those powers. So
that's definitely great.
We'll love to get your thoughts on that, for sure. What you think about that?
Yeah. Now I'm going to pick up issue 5 and be like, hey, Jordan, you know, my expectations are high. Like, what's going on? This is like a really great book. I mean, I love the subject matter. I love what you've done. It's very, I mean, I don't want to say clever. I don't want to minimize it in any way, but I think you've done a really good job. Like, I don't want to make it sound like what you're doing with your subject matter is like some sort of trick, because it's not. When I say clever, I mean, I feel like this is a very sort of like, I don't know, like a deep book. Like I feel like there's a lot of really interesting things going on here. I found it to be like a really great read, and I just congratulate you on this, because it's a very different take on something that we've seen a lot before.
Thank you. That means so much. So thank you so much for those kind words. 'Cause that's, That was my goal, and I know fan base fully supported me in that. It's like, I just wanted the story to be real, right? Like, even though they're superheroes, like, that to me is the only thing that's fictional, like the only stretch of the imagination. I wanted everything else in there to be 100% real life.
Yeah, and you've nailed it. I mean, like I said, in the beginning of the book, I didn't even realize it was happening in a universe, you know, with other things. I was like, oh, this is a very sort of like, you know, part of the reason, part of the thing I thought was happening was he was hiding himself because he was the only one, right? And it's like, am I going to get experimented on? And then there's, I mean, there's a couple of like really great funny scenes. There's one that I really liked where it had to do with the receptionist and their, the lunch hour, like, do you still read? And they showed like the lunch hour thing, not spoiling anything. I thought that was really funny. No. But there's a scene where somebody discovers his ability and is like throwing rocks at him and being like, hey, you know what I mean? You need to sort of step up. And I thought that that was great too. So,
cool.
I mean, this hits like on very different levels, and I thought you did a great job. So congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm glad that you felt that way.
And, yeah. And the, yeah.
Been out for 2 weeks. So don't worry about spoilers.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
So yeah. Feel free to talk about whatever.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. So this is Ripple Effects. Your name is Jordan Hart. It is out by Fanbase Press. It's on Hoopla, and it's like hoopla.com.
Yes.
Gotcha. And you will have a print edition at San Diego Comic-Con as well. Where can people find you online? Just like you and your stuff.
Yeah. So they can find me on Instagram. That's the only account I'm on. The only platform I'm on, I should say.
Good self-discipline there. Good for you.
Yeah. And my handle is Jordy Jordith. So JordyJordith. Or just go to Fanbase Press. They're on every platform. You'll find it there.
If
you can't.
Yeah, yep. Fanbase Press does great stuff. So congratulations on working with them as well.
Thank you. Yeah, and they're local too, like LA. And I was friends with Barbara and Brian for years before I pitched Ripple Effects, they're the only publisher I pitched. I felt that they were the ones that could best bring this to life. And they certainly have.
Nice.
So
did you have the whole series like laid out before you pitched to them or? Like,
Yes, I did in my mind. It was longer. It was like 8 issues.
Oh, wow.
And then we just really had to condense it down, which that's every comic.
Well, that's every project, right? Eventually, you just got to hack it apart, right?
Every comic I've had starts like 2 times at least as long as where it ends up. But, you know, comics are expensive. The comic is expensive and time consuming, and then printing is expensive too. So
that's why every other interview on this podcast, it's like a Kickstarter. I mean, that's the way it's kind of gone, but it's great.
Totally.
I mean, get to help people with their projects or talk about them. I mean, I am privileged, so that's great. And I'm privileged for having you on because this is a really great book, and I'm very happy for you. And I think it's a unique take on, you know, superheroes and very sensitive subject. And so congratulations.
Thank you. Well, the same for me, for you taking time to read it and have me on. I really appreciate it. And it's been a blast. I will talk comics and comics lore with anyone and everyone for hours on end.
I mean, I could go for several hours, but it's
I mean, any comic fan could, right?
Like, yeah, that's absolutely. Unfortunately, I'm like the cynical comic fan, so I'll probably come at people like, I don't like this, and they'll be like, why don't you like it?
That makes your words on Ripple Effects even better.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
No, this is a really, really great book, and congratulations again. It's Ripple Effects. Your name is Jordan Hart.
Yes.
Fanbase Press. It is currently on Hoopla. Look for it if you are going to San Diego Comic-Con. It is a great book. I very much enjoyed the first issue. Can't wait to see what's coming down the pike with this. I'm going to have to sign up for a Hoopla account now. And this is Part-Time Fanboy. My name is Christian Horn. You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that cynically saying wonderful social media stuff. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Thank you for listening. Check out Ripple Effects, and we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-time fanboy. Part time. I'm not doing part time.